Earlier today, we received the very sad news that State Representative Don Manning had very unexpectedly died. This was not from the coronavirus. I want everyone to understand that. This was following chest pains yesterday and a short hospitalization. Don was only 54. He worked tirelessly to advance issues important to the Mahoning Valley. Really did a wonderful job representing the Mahoning Valley at the State House. He helped workers in the GM Lordstown plant. Was a strong advocate for them and for economic development in the Mahoning Valley. Don was always looking out for his constituents. No one was a more passionate proponent. He was a passionate advocate for those with mental health issues as well, and I admired him a great deal for that as well. It was my privilege in December to sign a very important bill that he wrote, House Bill Number 12, which created the Ohio Children's Behavioral Health Prevention Network Stakeholder Group. And during the coronavirus crisis, he worked with us in getting information out to his constituents. He would email me or text me with ideas. He would do the same thing for Dr. Acton, his fellow Mahoning Valley native. Don was a Navy veteran, and we appreciate his service to our state and to our nation. Friend, I extend our most heartfelt condolences to his family, to his children, Sean and Taylor, and all members of his family at this very, very sad and difficult time. In a moment, Dr. Acton will give you all an update in regard to the coronavirus. And what she will tell you is certainly not good news. But I do want everyone to remember that none of this is really a surprise. We should take this very, very seriously, but it really is not a surprise. This invader, this virus, continues to infiltrate throughout our state. Community spread is, at this point, widespread. And as you listen to her, please keep in mind that none of this was really unexpected. This was predictable. So this is, though, a very, very critical time, and I want to talk to my fellow citizens of Ohio about this time and the actions that we must take. What we do now, what we do not do now, will really determine, ultimately, how many Ohioans die. This is an absolutely critical time. We determine, and we have in our own hands, how fast this will spread. We've talked about flattening the curve. We've talked about the steps that we absolutely have to take in order to allow our health system to survive, our health system to be able to deal with this crisis. There was a map and story in the New York Times this morning that I read online last night. And this is kind of the summary. This is what we do with no control measures. Now, we've already started control measures. We're well into it in Ohio. Some control measures, severe control measures. This is what it would look like by July. Percent infected by July 1. Now, this is a snapshot in time. It's a modeling. We don't know if it's going to turn out exactly like this, but this is based on good data about what could occur. I'm a big fan of the Back to the Future movies. And anyone who watches those movies know there can be an alternative future alternative. And there's many ways, depending on what you do here, depends on where you end up. And if you do something different here, you have a different outcome. And so I'm appealing to my fellow citizens. Ohio needs to be back here. This is where we need to be. Now, we've announced a number of measures. We will have more measures. We'll have more discussion about this and more news tomorrow. But this is not just what government does. Government can only do so much. The personal interactions that we have, how well we follow the CDC recommendations, how well we separate ourselves, how well we say no to trips, how well we say no to getting in the car and doing something that's not absolutely essential. That's going to determine what our future is. What we do now, today, tomorrow, will determine how many of us die. It's as simple as that. You've heard me talk about, use the term that this is no ordinary time, and I've likened this to a war. I didn't make up the term no ordinary time. That was used by First Lady Eleanor Roosevelt at the 1940 Democrat National Convention. This is part of what she said, and I think it's instructive for us because we are in a war. The United States in 1940 was not quite in the war yet, but a raging war was going on in Europe. This is what the First Lady Eleanor Roosevelt said. This is no ordinary time. No time for weighing anything except what we can best do for the country. This is no ordinary time, no time for weighing anything except what we can best do for the country. So we need to focus on this. We need to focus on what we do as citizens to protect ourselves, our families, and everyone else in Ohio. We must act as if we have been invaded by an enemy, because in truth, we really have been. We must not do anything to help the enemy. As we talked about several days ago, this enemy cannot advance. This enemy cannot move forward without our help. We need to do everything to defeat it. Just as last Saturday night and then Sunday morning, I started getting texts all over the state from people all over the state about bars being open and people congregating and coming together. About 10 or 11 o'clock today, I started getting calls and texts from people around the state telling me that Saturday morning, at least where they were, sort of looked like a regular Saturday morning. We can't have any more regular Saturday mornings for a while, just like we can't have any regular Saturday nights. Each night when I go to bed, I ask myself, did I do everything I could? What else can I do? What else can I do? And did I do everything I could that day to defeat this enemy, to slow it down? And so I would ask all of you, every night when you go to bed, to ask yourself, have I done everything within my power to protect us? Everything to slow it down, everything to stop it from going from one person to another. This is a silent invader. It's a silent invader because many times people do not know that they have it. Just don't know. And so assuming that everybody has it, assuming that it's here, because it is here, as Dr. Acton will explain in a moment, and it's infiltrated throughout our state, we have to assume that. And so I would just ask you, as I ask myself every night, have I done enough? Did I do everything today that I could do to stop this? I would ask you to ask yourselves the same thing. We control this. We control our own destiny. Let me talk about a few things that I'm ordering today. But first, let me describe, because I don't think I've talked about it, the EOC, the Emergency Operating Center. This is a center that was established many years ago. It is run by a veteran in these battles, Sima Merrick. It's used for floods. It's used for tornadoes. It's used for any kind of emergency that we might have. Dr. Acton, along with Sima and everyone at the EOC, have really meshed this operation together. So as Dr. Acton talks to you today about multiple hotspots around the state, I want to assure everyone that this EOC is there, it's functioning. Dr. Acton is using it as an arm. Very, very important. It is a command and control center. It's a supply, deals with supply chain logistics. We have so many of you who have offered help, many of you who are making sacrifices, many of you who are companies that are producing products and doing things, and making sure that we can track that, we know where they are, is just vitally important so that we can get these things to the people who need them. We are clearly in a full response mode to this attack. I want to assure you that it is working and is working well. Let me talk about an order that we've been looking at for some time, and that is adult day services for people with developmental disabilities. And let me tell you about the order that we're issuing today. The individuals who I'm talking about today are people with disabilities who receive care every single day. And our concern is for them, as it has been for everyone else, that they congregate in large numbers. That is not good. That is a danger to them. We face, though, the challenge of making sure each one of them was able, if we close these centers, each one of them would be able to get the services that they needed. Today, we can say that they will get these services, that there's provision for each and every one of them, and therefore, we're going to issue the order today. Today, we're issuing an order that closes adult day services across Ohio, with the exception of settings of 10 people or less. Across Ohio, over 26,000 of our fellow citizens, people with developmental disabilities, leave their homes to receive group-based services during the day. These are called adult day services. Adult day service locations are a place for people with developmental disabilities to get work training, social and recreational opportunities, and skill building. Group sizes vary from as small as 4 people to as many as 100 or more. There are a large number of people with developmental disabilities in adult day services who are aging and who have health conditions that make them particularly at risk. Many people live in family or group settings and then travel to their adult day services, creating increased exposure when they go and when they come back. Some locations are already closed or downsized. And families, guardians, providers are and have made the tough decisions to keep people home and I applaud them for doing that. But we felt it necessary now for the safety of those with disabilities in larger groups to close them, and we'll feel confident that now that we can do that. Small groups and services in a person's home can continue while following proper precautions. Further, we're encouraging providers and direct support professionals to work creatively to continue to support these individuals, which they're going to do. We've been working with the providers to make sure that there is a place for each person to go and for them to be able to continue to get the services that they need. We've remained grateful to the providers and to direct support professionals for rising to this challenge and for their commitment to support some of our most vulnerable Ohioans, some of our most valued, some of our most loved fellow citizens. I will now ask Dr. Amy Acton to come up. She'll be followed by Lieutenant Governor John Husted, who's been doing, has Amy, a phenomenal job as we go through this. And then we'll be followed with Lori Criss. And I'll say a few things before I introduce Lori. Amy?
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. I want to begin today by reminding you that everyone matters right now, and every day matters. And this is time. This is the time we've been talking about where you absolutely have to take the governor's advice to heart. And I'll tell you a little more about what I'm seeing here in Ohio. But first, I really want to please send my condolences to Representative Manning. He's a colleague. He died of a heart attack, I'm told. We talked as recently as Wednesday. He's from where I grew up in Youngstown, and he's passionate about helping the folks in that area begin to get their minds around what is happening. His background is mental health and behavioral health. As you heard about the most amazing legislation he had done on that behalf, and he had been in constant contact with me, asking me ideas, sharing me his ideas about how we could reach more people. And so please, Youngstown, everyone around Ohio, and definitely in my hometown, you know, he was trying to tell you, take this seriously, and it is a tremendous loss and one that's hard for me to really comprehend right now. I want to talk about the science and community spread. If anything, as you know, that has been my job here from the beginning. There is a fallacy out there, and it is so important that we move past this. There is a fallacy that Middle America is not impacted by this to a large extent. We know, as I told in an earlier taping, and if you want to go back and look at that, we are a state of 11.7 million people, the seventh largest state, a sister state of Hubei province, with extensive businesses with global impact, with extensive universities, public and private, with students and professors in exchange. And everything points to the fact that we had a seeding of this infection early on, and we were one of the last states to get the reagents we needed to do testing. And our case numbers are a history snapshot of the past. They are not telling the full data and the full story of what is happening here. And I need you to look at what's happening on the ground to understand the full impact of what is happening here. It was, in fact, like I've said before, it is the seeing a star at a distance. You're seeing a snapshot of the past. Even what goes on in the future in the next few days is still minimal because we are conserving all our available testing for the most high-risk and hospitalized and frontline workers So we are withholding the most of our testing in our lab because we are running out of reagent. And believe me, we have ingenuity here. Believe me, Ohio State, Cleveland Clinic, and others are inventing every component of the testing kit. But you are looking at a snapshot of history. The work by the modelers that the governor showed, the charts that were in the New York Times, they are a snapshot of what's going on in Ohio, because even the modelers are having to use the best data they can get, and that is incomplete data. So it's very, very important to realize that we have now 247 confirmed cases, a snapshot of what's going on. We have onset of illness from February 7th to March 19th. We have an age range of age 1 to 91 with an average median age of 51 years. We have 58 people hospitalized, multiple in ICU. We are taking people off of ventilators in Ohio. We have 3 confirmed deaths today and multiple that are still under investigation and have already been reported to the media but have not come into our data center yet. We have 31 counties impacted, knowing full well that people are coming from other counties and being recorded in larger medical centers. We have hot spots in nursing homes on the ground in Dayton area, in Tuscarawas County, in a small, small area of Ohio, and in Cuyahoga County in Cleveland, in a big city. We are seeing this on the ground. I sometimes feel that I am in a war zone, I'm going to war, and I'm coming back home and wondering why everybody at home doesn't see what I see, because you can't see the scurry and the flurry of activity that's happening on the ground at the local level. I implore the media, you help us so much in this, to go to the local level and see what is happening. I want to tell you about innovation that's happening in Middle America right now. I want you to go to Cuyahoga County and talk to Health Commissioner Terry Allen and his medical director, Heidi Gullett, who's head of the Preventive Medicine Program at Case Western Reserve University. I want you to talk to them about their amazing 5-layered triage system where they're following cases, presumptives. They're creating whole tiers of doctors trained in preventive medicine who are taking on each high-risk nursing home in their area and long-term facility. And there are a new army of people out on the ground doing case histories and contact investigations. They are doing surveillance in high-risk clusters. Without all the available testing, they're using their tests wisely, and then they are going even to family clusters. You need to tell the story of these innovators on the ground, and we need to get over this thought. Yes, we are behind Washington by days, by a week. We are behind New York in seeing what they're facing, but we have to take the recommendation of these modelers. We have to take the recommendations of the best available data that we have from Dr. Shaman, from Northeastern University in Boston, Dr. Vespignani. We have got to realize what they're saying to us, that those of us who have the days, not weeks, to take these measures need to take them now. We will benefit most. Others did not have this opportunity. I want to say that these measures we're taking, we are equally working with the best scientists and people around the world to figure out the economic impact, because it is no small thing. Every one of these decisions has rippling consequences, cascading effects. It has effects on people's health every time we have to make one of these changes. Vulnerable people are the most at risk, and we're looking at that social vulnerability index. We are working with our nonprofits and philanthropy, and you'll hear more and more in days to come. These are hard choices, but these are the best tools we have, and we must use them now. We are seeing endless good deeds as well, and I just need to do a shout out. I told you yesterday about a bakery delivery that did not happen to a nursing home overwhelmed right now. I want to tell you that Gordon Food Service and Klosterman Bread stepped up. They'd made deliveries to the nursing home. Hampton Logistics, a small business carrier, brought said that they could transport 2,000 pounds of anything needed delivered. We do have an emergency operating system. We are building logistics that have never existed before because this is an unprecedented public health emergency, and folks are stepping up. I heard a story in the Columbus Dispatch of a small business that was still doing carryout but was saying goodbye for the last day, and of a customer who overheard that and left a $2,500 tip to help the workers there. So this is absolutely the truth. Human and economic development, they're inextricably linked, and every one of these decisions is going to take the best scientists and the best people helping us remove what we can when we can, and I want to work with you on that, and so does my team. Ohio, we've talked about the hurricane analogy. We've talked about the fact that you want to evacuate while the sun is still shining. We talked about how difficult it is to build these systems when it's in the middle of the eye of the storm. We are in increasingly heavy rain. This is the time to batten down your hatches. This is the time to stay at home in place. And I look forward to working and working with all of you in the days to come.
Thank you, Dr. Acton. Dr. Acton and I had a great conversation earlier today, and you just heard her talk about the cascading effect or community spread from a health point of view. But we also understand that that has an economic consequence as well, that there is a cascading effect in the economy, that there is a community spread in the economy in the sense that businesses are going to suffer, and as a result, so will their employees. And we're very mindful of that and always trying to seek the balance, which is the tough task that the governor has, the tough decision-making process the governor has. Dr. Acton and I were trying to pull people together to make sure that we're finding a balance of that conversation. And so that you know, we are not making decisions in isolation. We have a great team from the governor's staff, my staff, the entire cabinet, who's working with the business organizations of the state, who represent everybody from retail to manufacturing, all down the line throughout the economy. We talk with the local chambers of commerce. We talk with different types of business leaders to help advise us on the impact of our decisions and how we can minimize the impact as best we can as possible while also being healthy. And I have a couple of announcements today based on their great feedback. The first one is in regarding the Bureau of Workers' Compensation. Bureau of Workers' Compensation provides the insurance that covers injured workers. It has been well managed and is in a position to help. And so what we are announcing today is that the Bureau of Workers' Compensation is going to make sure that businesses can forego payments for March, April, and May and defer them until June 1, 2020, at which time further consideration will be given based on where we are in fighting this pandemic. The Bureau of Workers' Compensation covers 249,000 public and private employers. This decision will leave $200 million in the economy through the deferral of those payments. For more information, you can go to bwc.ohio.gov. I want to thank Director our administrator, Stephanie McLeod, and her team, and all of the staff in the business community who worked to advise on this issue so that we can provide a little relief during this difficult time. Another piece of feedback we received out there in the supply chain, we had grocers and people who deliver medical supplies ask if they could have a waiver from the Department of Transportation in seeking the weight and size waivers that they need to provide larger loads of these vital products to the healthcare and the food supply chain community. I'm announcing today that the Ohio Department of Transportation will be granting those waivers for haulers carrying essential goods. They will be able to print that permit and carry it with them. And the permit fee for oversized loads containing supplies that we are referring to in terms of the critical supply chain, those permits fees will be waived. You can find more information at transportation.ohio.gov. So these are a couple of examples of things that businesses have told us will help them that we are trying to do to give them that relief. And there certainly will be more to come as we work through this. Reminder for small businesses who that Ohio has been declared a disaster relief state. And so you can find loan information from the Small Business Administration to help you get through this difficult time at disasterloan.sba.gov/ELA. And another reminder on health insurance. There has been a grace period granted under the governor's executive order through the Department of Insurance that will defer premium payments for all health insurers for up to 60 calendar days. And so those are just some of the issues that we've been able to work through now in the early days of this process. More will be coming, and we appreciate the ideas and the cooperation, because truly there are innovators out there in business that are helping develop the supply chain on medical supplies, using technology to do some things that we previously didn't think that we had the ability to do. And so keep it coming. We're all in this together. We appreciate it. And I know one final thought to the reporters out there that are covering this. We appreciate what you're doing to help get these messages out. We appreciate NPR Radio covering this live, Ohio Channel, public television, and all the other news outlets that are doing this. Take this information seriously. Dr. Acton is talking to the best people in the world on this. The governor is talking to everybody under the sun about this, who is giving him counsel and advice and helping to make sure that we are making the best possible decisions as fast as they can be made. And we really appreciate everybody pitching in. We're all in this together. We will get through it together, and we will come out of this strong. Thank you.
Just to note, the graph that you saw up there a few minutes ago when I was talking about the spread and the alternative ways that this could turn out, right before we came on today, Dr. Acton and I were on the phone with the author of that. So, as John said, we're doing everything we can to reach out and get as much information as we can. I've asked Lori Chris, who is a member of my cabinet, Mental Health and Addiction Services, to share some thoughts with us today. This is a difficult time. People's lives are being disrupted. We want to make sure everyone remains healthy from a mental health point of view. And I thought Lori might have some thoughts and comments about that. And we'll look at Lori up here in a moment. We hope. Hi, Lori.
Hi, Governor.
Where are you speaking from?
Well, I'm in our family room, and I've had the whole family involved in helping us get up set up for this day. So thanks for inviting me to join you remotely. I can't tell you how much it really means to be able to still contribute and participate fully, but stay at home just like you've asked all of us to do. And I really appreciate your emphasis, not just on our physical health, but our mental health as Ohioans too. It was just a week ago that I was here talking about how the things we're all feeling are normal: stress, anxiety, fear, grief, a little anger, some sadness. And this is science, just like public health strategies that Dr. Amy are talking about are science. mental health care is health care. The brain is part of the body. The first thing I want you to know is that we want all Ohioans to know is that behavioral health care is open for business. It's part of the vital health care system. And so for those citizens who are already having mental health challenges and addiction issues and you're part of the service system already, please stay in touch with your provider. Please keep your appointments. We want you to get the care that you need for those issues and stay connected to your services and appointments. If you're not sure if you should go in for your appointment, please call your counselor, case manager, your provider, and see if you can get care through telehealth. That's available now through both phone and online through video conferencing as well. We want you to take your medications if you're prescribed medication and to stay in touch with your prescriber and to get refills and if you need any injections to get those on schedule as needed. And if this is the first time you're experiencing any mental health concerns or problems with alcohol or drug use, we want you to reach out for help. Providers are still taking new patients and we want you to reach out for help. The most important thing to know is that you are not alone. I know that we've been talking a lot about social distancing, and that really means physical distancing. There are new ways for all of us to figure out how to stay connected to care and to connected to each other socially, and we're all doing that, but you are not alone. During this crisis, we've compiled resources for all Ohioans to connect to make sure you're staying home but still getting the support that you need. So go to coronavirus.ohio.gov and click the tab for resources for adults. It lists the contact information from our department, Mental Health and Addiction Services, and provides critical hotlines and resources that you would need to take care of you. And we'll continue to update this page with videos and tip sheets and trainings and other resources over the next several days and make those available to everyone. If you're in crisis right now, please use the crisis text line, which is 4HOPE to 741-741. So text 4HOPE to 741-741 if you need to talk to someone immediately. If you're thinking about hurting yourself, please call the Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255. Remember, this is temporary. You are resilient. Ohio's resilient. We have grit. Give your family a sense of hope. You've done hard things before. You can do them now. Name your challenges, set goals, and take actions to solve your problems. Some of us were already in a hard spot before this started, and so this may make it even more difficult for you right now. And we want to make sure that we're supporting you and your families. So ask for help when you need it. There's a lot of help out there. And now I just want to talk briefly about some tips for managing stress with kids and families. And these tips can be found online and more tips as well. The first thing for all of us to remember is that kids take their cues from adults. And that's from newborns to teens. Young people feel the energy that grown-ups are putting off. And so here are some simple things we can do to help ourselves feel better and to help them feel in control as well. The first is talking with your kids about what's happening. Sometimes kids feel responsible for things that are completely out of their control, and it's important for us to talk to them and share information that's digestible for them as kids, not to talk to them as adults. It's also helpful for your family to have a plan of how you're doing your part to prevent the spread of coronavirus and to help take care of each other within the home, and for kids to have a role in that as well. So make sure you include them and encourage them to ask any questions they have and share their feelings and take those seriously. We should also all be monitoring and limiting our media exposure. There's a lot of unhelpful information out there, and we need to make sure that we're monitoring what our kids are watching, what they're hearing, and what they're reading as well. So remember, media is there 24/7 for our convenience, but not for our consumption. And we need to step away and unplug. But when we do plug back in, use trusted resources and make sure that your kids are doing the same. Most of us are not used to being with members of our family and household 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So this is hard, and it's not always pretty. Personal space and quiet time, time away, is important for all of us. So we need to make sure we find a way to create that within our homes, both for our kids and for adults. It's also helpful for us to remember to use our manners to keep our cool. And so saying please and thank you makes it a little bit harder to snap at each other. I know it's harder for me to yell when I'm saying, please clean up this mess. Thank you. And if I'm acting stressed out, a tool that I always use to help me get back in gear is a little word called HALT. So HALT. If I'm feeling hungry, angry, lonely, or tired, I need to take care of myself and then go back into action supporting other people. So that's HALT. Hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. And then finally, try to maintain a routine for your family. It's different than your normal schedule each day, but make sure that you're maintaining a routine. That's really important for young people, kids in our homes, to feel secure. This is a time for us to slow down. We're not used to doing that. We can connect in new ways with our family inside and outside of our home and do those projects that we've been meaning to do, spend more time together, either in person or remotely. And remember, a smile and a kind word go a long way. So with that, I'll just say be well, stay well, physically and mentally. Thanks for the ability to be here today.
Thanks, Lori. Thank you very much. Great. Well, as Lori said, as we go through this crisis, it's so important to stay connected. And there's many, many ways to do that. Yesterday, I got a letter from our grandson, Albert. Albert's our oldest grandson, grandchild, and Albert is working on his PhD in chemistry. He obviously did not get my science gene or lack of science gene. I think he got it from his other grandfather, who's a medical doctor, or maybe he got it from Fran, too. But that was great. So I would just say to all my other grandkids who are out there, maybe watching, you could also send your grandparents a letter. That would be a good thing. Fran had the idea of seeing if all the grandkids actually could send a letter to her mother. That would be their great-grandmother. And there's a picture of our family that is actually down in North Carolina. They live in North Carolina, and they're doing. Looks like they're making a card. So we would just stay in touch. These are not necessarily easy times, but we can kind of make fun things for the kids to do and fun things for us to do. And again, the whole idea is to stay connected. Before we open up to questions, let me just say I've been really pleased. The other day I asked, Fran had the idea of everyone, since this really is a war and we need to rally together, just like this country always does, we need to be patriotic. So Fran suggested everybody fly a flag, fly the American flag, fly the Ohio flag. And so we've started to get some pictures that people are posting. Young people are putting flags up and older people putting flags up, and we've got a number of these pictures that have been posted, and I would just encourage you, everyone watching today, fly your flag, put that flag up, and take a picture, put it up on Facebook, put it somewhere, because we're all in this together. Happy now to take some questions from the news media, and just for those of you at home, I'm normally looking at screens that have pictures of the news media up there. They're in another room right through there. But I don't know whether, Eric, we can get them up or not. If not, we'll just I'll listen to the questions just like everybody at home is doing as well. So I don't know who has the first question.
Governor, it's Lou Ann Stoya, ABC 6, Fox 28, Columbus. First of all, we have our flag up.
Great.
We talked about the hospitals being 75 or 70% capacity right now in Ohio. But with the surge, we understand that there is a need for more beds and critical care. Can we talk about what are the spaces being created now in advance of a crisis?
Sure. I'll let Dr. Acton take that. I mean, one of the things I've talked about is that at the request of the hospitals, the National Guard is erecting some tents. This is to create separation as well as additional space. But we had a conference call with a number of the CEOs of hospitals yesterday. I know they all are focused very much on that. Amy, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I believe, as the governor said, we have been working closely with all the CEOs and CMOs of all the hospitals in Ohio in partnership through the Ohio Hospital Association and the Children's Hospital Association. And they've been hard at work. I know they're going to reveal more of some of their strategies. They're putting the finishing touches on that. But each of them has done all their pandemic planning internally. But each of our big cities and bigger centers are sort of in partnership with smaller hospitals regionally. As you know, this is a terribly hard time, even on hospitals. So we are already having to face some small hospital closures. So, you know, by decreasing elective surgeries, a lot of these hospitals are even having difficulty making payroll. And so I say that to say all of them have dropped all competition. They're all working together, depending on their regional approach that they'll be describing to you next week, early next week. They are going to, you know, use the facilities they have differently. Some will be using, you know, enhanced sort of the tent capacity that you've been seeing on television. Some of them will be using perhaps old hospitals that had been closed. So there are a variety of plans being done, but they're regional in nature based on the resources available. And of course, they have to be flexible so that, you know, as we see this peak and ebb and peak in different communities, they'll be able to respond accordingly. And that's why our emergency operating center, it's like a NASA. Imagine, you know, that room with all those screens. The CDC has one. All locals, I have one in my agency, but we have one for our state, and they're constantly monitoring the state on the ground. We are constantly ear to the ground with our locals, asking, what do you need? What can we deploy? What advice can we do? How can we come up behind you and support you? So I know they look forward to sharing that plan with you in the near future.
Hi, thanks for this update. Jesse Ballmer with the Cincinnati Inquirer, mostly for the health director, but come up in the past couple days. Do surgical abortions fall under the category of an elective procedure that was banned earlier in the week? Could you maybe provide some clarity there?
Yes, well, I'll direct everybody to take a look at the order. Again, the spirit of non-elective surgeries has to do with our absolute extreme shortage of the PPE and the equipment, and I know our teams are working on this. I want to say one thing. I am the doctor for 11.7 million people and all women, no matter where they fall on this, and I think that's very important. We cannot allow the politics of things to get in the way of doing what we have to do in a state of emergency.
Hi, this is Laura Hancock from Cleveland.com. Just following up, can I get some clarity? Is there ever a time when an abortion would be considered an emergency procedure?
Look, there's an order that has been issued. I would refer people to look at that order. I'm going to let it go at that. This is... The Attorney General is involved in regard to that order, and I would refer things like this to the Attorney General at this point. These are fact-driven issues. It's very difficult to answer without knowing all the facts.
Just really quick, we have spoken to some readers, including one who is a physician at a hospital and is having respiratory symptoms and is having trouble getting a COVID-19 test. And so do you guys know what the situation is with the healthcare providers getting tested? I know that they're considered priority, right?
Laura, it was at Christ Hospital that you're referring to?
I don't think so, but
yeah, there was a situation I've been made aware of. Absolutely, if they're in a hospital, that hospital should be working. If they don't have the test, go to your nearest major medical center. But I was aware of a situation, it's about 2 to 3 days old now, where our lab helped them figure that out. And I think there was a travel, like somebody was a citizen of another state. So that particular situation has been, I believe, looked into.
Hi, Beth Berger, Columbus Dispatch. Thanks so much for taking my question. I wanted to follow up on something that Dr. Acton said earlier during her statement. She said that we're taking people off ventilators. Does that suggest that we'll be having more deaths or that patients are recovering? If you could elaborate on that.
You know, at this stage, we have not been able yet to follow somebody through to full recovery. But if you look at the areas where they're ahead of us, we certainly will be seeing that in days to come. Remember, 80% of us will stay at home with this, and we will, you know, recover, and we'll watch for signs of it worsening to go to the hospital. It's not always a fun. It can be up to 2 weeks of not feeling well, but we will recover. We are early on in our illnesses and deaths, so I have not had the case stories of people that I'll be sharing with you and enjoying sharing with you in days to come. But we will be seeing more deaths. We expect that as part of this spreading and more people becoming infected. And, you know, there are folks who, despite all heroic measures, are not going to make it with this. I want to say something again while I have the moment about testing. Ohioans, I absolutely know. I want you to know every ounce of test we have, every nasal swab, everything is being maximized in Ohio. It's complicated. There's no one's fault. It's not something that we did in Ohio to not have this capability. But what we have to do in my job, again, the hard, hard decisions, is using what we have as we have it well. We have great innovation going on where we're going to build our own kits. And you'll see my fellow states doing the same thing. That's why media is so important, actually, because when I tell you about these innovations, this is changing so rapidly. When you post a story about something going on in Cuyahoga, that will get to my fellow states faster than any conference call a week from now, you know, with my colleagues. And that's why I'm asking the media to help get stories of innovation. But for you at home, for most of us, that test will not make a difference in how you're treated. So if you're a person who can really ride this out and your doctor has said, stay home, here are the measures, and let me know if you have worsening breathing or something, you know, knowing that test will not have changed like the actual treatment that your provider will be doing with you. So we have a tiered plan on testing that was put out in a health alert to all primary care doctors, I believe, yesterday. And I think I know it's hard. I know at our call center, the 833-4-ASK-ODH, that is the number one ask question about testing. And I know people, you know, are afraid that they can't be tested. But what I want you to do is really in Ohio assume you might be asymptomatic, or even if you have it, I want you to just know that test will not change how we're going to help you get through it.
Governor, this is Jake Zuckerman from the Ohio Capital Journal. You mentioned a week ago that you were getting texts of the bars filled up for the Saturday before St. Patrick's Day. You made similar remarks today. Do you think people are ignoring good advice? Do you think they're not understanding the advice they're being given? I mean, why are people...
Look, I think a lot of people, I think the majority of Ohioans understand it. I think they get it. But look, this is still difficult for people. This is a silent enemy. This is an invisible enemy. We don't see this. And so when we do the modeling, when we do not that I do the modeling, but when we look at modeling, when we do projections, when we talk to people and then try to convey that to the people of Ohio, they're not seeing it. So I think the vast majority of Ohioans get it. I think that we still have some education to do to some of our fellow citizens. And again, that's why I made the remarks that I made today. We really control our destiny. It's here. How it spreads, how fast it spreads, we control. I mean, part of it is what we order. We've ordered a lot of things. We'll order other things. But a lot of it's going to come down to what I do in my life, what you do in your life, what every one of 11.7 million Ohioans do in their lives, and what they don't do. So I just, you know, I'm asking people to be very conscious of that. And what, as I said, what I think about every night is, have I done all I could do? I would ask every Ohioan when they go to bed to think the same thing. Hey, have I done everything I can to avoid the spread? You know, did I do the things during the day and not do the things that I knew were going to cause some spread? So we can't do this just with orders. We have to have people really, really, really engaged. And there has to be a sense of urgency, and there has to be a sense of understanding of the gravity of this. We're playing for big stakes here. Lives are at stake, and a lot of lives are at stake.
Thank you. Hello, this question is for Dr. Acton. This is Ori Givens from Spectrum News One. We've been getting a lot of feedback from pharmacists about various issues, whether it's PPE or distancing in grocery stores. We have one big concern that they're seeing a lot of prescriptions for a drug called hydroxychloroquine, which I guess the president also tweeted about today. Can you just talk to the policy around that drug, and should we be seeing all these prescriptions at this time?
You know, as Dr. Fauci said, you know, this is an experimental, compassionate use of this drug because, of course, in the timeframes we're seeing, you know, no one's able to do those trials yet. There were some thoughts of its use in China and elsewhere, I believe France. But it's important to know that this drug is very, very vital to people with rheumatologic diseases. There are other uses of this anti-malarial drug, and we can't have a rush on this drug in asymptomatic people. This is the drug you take when the governor does so much work in Haiti. When we went there on a trip, this is what you take as prophylaxis for malaria. You know, there's a limited supply of it. And similarly, again, we're talking, this is a social contract, folks. We've got to work together. I've worked specifically. My team has reached out to the pharmacy board. We've got to limit the prescription to 14 days if we are going to use it in these compassionate use circumstances so that people don't just stockpile it and try to sell it or misuse it, because our patients who have autoimmune diseases and arthritic diseases, the rheumatologists are really speaking up right now. I think this would be a great thing at the federal level as well to take a look at, because we want to be flexible here as we try everything we can. And again, everyone's trying everything they can, but we also have to think about, you know, those other complications, as you're mentioning. Thank you.
Thank you. Hey, everyone. Andy Chow with Ohio Public Radio and Television State House News Bureau. For the governor and Dr. Acton, you've been pretty transparent in the fact that Ohio doesn't have a lot of tests, and so we sort of have to assume that if somebody's sick, they have to have it. But without the clarity in the number of cases that Ohio has, what kind of data is out there for hospitals to prepare for this storm that's coming? Will they know when they're about to get hit by all of this?
Yeah, let me just start it, and then I'll turn it over to the expert here. But what we have been saying in every one of these 2 o'clock or 2:30, whenever we started, press conferences, is this stuff is here. It's already here. We already have community spread. We don't have to have tests to know that. We know that because all the experts tell us how this progresses. It would appear to be progressing in Ohio, as was predicted. So these hospitals are trying to figure out exactly, you know, where they're going. But I will guarantee you, from talking to the CEOs, each one of them is really focused on it like a laser. I mean, and they have been focused on it. They didn't just wake up this morning and say, "Oh, we're going to have a problem." So Dr. Acton.
Absolutely. So all modeling is very difficult when you don't have numbers. But that said, you know, there are a number of people who have been tested, but it was sent. Remember, early on, our criteria was sending people who are outpatient to the private labs, like the LabCorps and Quest. Well, many of those tests are taking a long time to come back. So we know there are a lot more people tested that were already suspected. There are presumptive cases. There are contacts being traced, and there are clusters. So at more of the regional level, that's why I keep pointing out, go look at Cuyahoga. I highly recommend you go talk. Just an amazing doctor there. Again, there's so many heroes in this. what they're doing there and inventing, which we will be using all over the state. They're being able to do some early epi curves and modeling. We have some great statisticians and modelers that we're usurping from all the best universities here in Ohio who are kind of trying to build up that bandwidth to give some of those numbers. Also, the Ohio Hospital Association, they sit on a lot of data about routine usage in hospitals, influenza-like illnesses, and other data. So they are actually doing some modeling. So a group of people are coming together to try to do the best. But even the CEOs asked me, could I say exactly when a given community surge will happen? It's really, I can't accurately say that prediction, but what they're watching is what they're seeing in their own ERs right now. You know, they're at 70%-ish capacity across the board because it's a heavy flu season. So you'll see a lot of that modeling as we have better and better data. And my sincere hope to everyone is we're going after testing. So the second we have it, we're going to be out there doing every surveillance, every cluster, you know, full court. We were all built up for it. We had an amazing Cleveland Clinic, Ohio State. They had already, many hospitals around the state had built up this testing capability with a doctor's order, but literally ran out of swabs. So, you know, they had to stop. And again, we'll all look at all this in postmortem. There's so much to this. It's really easy to play a blame game. It's really easy to give in to politics. And I just beg of people, we have to do what we can do with what we have now. And that's how we're focused in Ohio. That's how, you know, other state health officers are looking at this. There are also great people to go talk to across this country. State health officers could tell you a lot about what they're seeing and then refer you to people who are really the on the battleground in the local health departments.
All right. Thank you.
Governor, this is Noah Blundo with Hannah News Service. You've had sign interpreters at a lot of these briefings. I wonder where you would direct people who need reliable information on the situation in other languages?
Good question. That is a good question. I don't know what we have available. You know, Amy?
Yeah, early on we engaged to have some of our materials translated, and that work is ongoing and needs to catch up, absolutely. I think we have really got to, we're changing our guidance almost daily. Even our notes to our doctors are going out that one day and then the next day. So I know that our agency is contracted to have people do that. We have huge populations in Ohio, Somali, Nepalese, in addition to the Spanish, which was easier to do right on. So we are actively translating this show I just saw in the sign in Spanish. So I did not know that. So that's wonderful. But we have to get these messages out. And again, we're all watching this right now. Those of you who have, again, it's just been amazing. We were just talking to a small group of media when this began, and now we realize there's a following of people who are relying on this news every day we do it. But there are tons of people, for various reasons, whether they're working or whatever, are not watching this. You keep saying that. Lieutenant Governor keeps reminding me, how are we going to tell you to batten down the hatches and get that to everywhere it needs to be? We need the faith-based community to help us in this, all those small churches and stuff. We need people going to good sources of information, coronavirus.ohio.gov, and then translating it to their audiences, whether you're a YMCA or whether you have a small parish. We really need your help. I know all the legislators and lawmakers and leaders of cities and communities, big and small, are trying to use the same talking points that we're using, and that's why all of us coming together to one source of information is so important. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, Laura Hancock again from Cleveland.com. Dr. Acton, do you have any information on this newest death out of Cuyahoga County? Age, anything?
For the local things, I know they're going to come to you. I do know it's a 91-year-old gentleman, and my condolences go out to his family and to his wife. And they'll tell you more of the history and the surrounding story. So it's more reason to go talk to them. Thank you.
Thanks.
Sierra Johnson, 10 TV News. As we work to eliminate that risk of clusters in the community spread, any thoughts on the plans or orders in the pipeline regarding our jails and our holding centers and some of our prisons?
Well, we continue to work with our sheriffs on that. You know, we had an order very, very early on in this in regard to our prisons as far as no visitation. No visitors. We know that's tough on everyone, but we wanted to cut that out. Very important. We also have a protocol in place, and the same way with the jails. One of the issues that I know the director has been working with sheriffs on is the transport when someone comes out of a jail and goes into the state prison, and that is something that we have to be very, very careful of. Anytime we move anybody from anywhere to someplace else, you worry about that spread. So I know she's been working, the director's been working very closely with the sheriffs around the state.
Any thoughts on early release of anyone?
Well, again, I would have to talk with the director about that. I mean, we're not looking at early release out of the prison system. But in the county jails, that is under the jurisdiction of the court. And so that I would refer that to the local court system. And they're the ones who decide, they're involved. They're looking at their own jail. They have to make the determinations how much space they have. They must make the determinations about who is going in and who gets released. So that's really a local decision by the local court.
Thank you.
Governor Andy Chow again, and for Dr. Acton, two questions that we keep getting almost every day. One is, do you know how many cases of COVID-19 we have in Ohio of people under the age of 18? And then also, the idea of, is the virus more of a risk to pregnant women? The idea of pregnant women and needing to go to work, I know that there's not a lot of data out there, but that's something that we keep getting asked a lot.
I don't have a breakdown other of the ages other than we know our age range starts at 1 and goes to 91, and I'll see what I can do about more of that data. It's so hard right now, I have to tell you. There's so much data coming in from so many places. Again, 247 cases today. And then your second question.
Are pregnant women pregnant more women, at risk,
yes,
of...
Okay. So the studies, there's been a little bit of study out there, but the numbers are very small. So there isn't a lot. There's not indication yet based on the one small study sample I saw. And we'll try to get that on our website. But what I can say is for pregnant women, as your doctor will probably talk to you, getting any infection during pregnancy, it's really a fever that is often something like if you catch the flu. So, I take your doctor's advice. Obviously, again, I've had several friends who are expecting and have asked me that same question. And I really want you doing what I want everyone else doing, which is really make your circle as small as possible, follow all the precautions we've given you, stay at home if you at all can, and limit your exposure and keep following that guidance. And let your doctor know if you're not feeling well, stay in close contact with your provider. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, Beth Berger, Columbus Dispatch again. One more other question. I just wanted to go back to the ventilators. We know that there's a shortage nationwide. And when you said we were taking people off ventilators, are we talking about a scenario where doctors in our state are having to choose between one coronavirus patient to the next on who gets, the resources? Are we to that point now?
No, we are not at that point right now in Ohio, thank goodness. And everything we're doing and everything we're asking of you is so we never get to that point.
Do we have a plan in terms of ventilators if we do have a shortage and the infection rate rises? Can you elaborate on that?
Yes. And as I've mentioned, we're pulling together numbers to get a sense of what's out there across the state. But I can tell you, given some of the projections on the surge, we know that, if you look at some of the national data, without even looking at Ohio data, you'll notice that bed numbers and this equipment does not add up. So what we're doing here in Ohio is we are repurposing a lot of things, including anesthesia, typical anesthesia. We're not doing a lot of elective surgery, so we are actually looking at using all that. There are manual ventilators. I know the president talked today about what's in the stockpile, but there are sort of some lower tech, not as elaborate type of mechanical ventilators that are still out there. We have a stash of those as well. But what we're looking at is what all could we use across every venue in Ohio, not necessarily sitting in a hospital today as part of their routine equipment. We're looking at ECMO and other things that are used in ICUs. So we're really, the hospitals in that work are looking at all that. Everything we're doing is to not have to make those difficult decisions. And the CDC has put out some guidance based on how do you make and how do you do that and how do you maximize that capacity. So that would be worth looking at as well.
Thank you.
Laura Hancock again, Cleveland.com. Dr. Acton, I believe you talked a little bit about the clusters, and I was unclear. Are you saying the clusters are in those metro and county areas that you mentioned at nursing homes, or are the nursing home situations separate? Can you kind of explain the, what you were, the clusters?
And losing all other cluster definitions as well, because that crossed my mind. So what I'm saying by cluster is it's really an epidemiologic term. But we're really looking at that spread in a area based on those contact investigations and the work the disease detectors are doing. So you might see that. Remember early on I talked about, nursing homes where we were seeing influenza-like illness, but they were testing negative for flu. To me, that's something that, puts a flag up, is something else going on there. And maybe that was going on early on, as now we're seeing some of the data. And that includes, and there's guidance out there as well as coroner-related work that's underway. But a cluster might be in a family or in a school. I know one of the situations that Tuscarawas is facing right now, and they can tell you more details about it, is you have a situation where sometimes some of our, and this may have happened in Dayton as well, but please defer to the local to give you details, but you might have somebody that is a physician that is going to hospitals and is going also to nursing homes, perhaps giving care in multiple sites, that then comes down with the illness and has then, in fact, been in contact with a lot. So as you can imagine, investigating all this takes tremendous manpower. And so those are the things and that we're looking at to try to, these new measures we're doing for all of us, we're still doing all the old stuff we were doing to contain this. And we track everyone down and try to lock that down and let everyone know who might have come in contact to be, even if they're not symptomatic, quarantining for the full 14 days, because we want to limit that expansion of that cluster.
Thank you.
Governor Eric Halperin with NBC4, I've been told I am the last question today. We have gotten a lot of calls from places around the state about big mills or plants that employ hundreds of people that they're still open. There's still a lot of people at work, about why those places are still open. Are there going to be any more orders to maybe control some of that?
Well, we've done all the orders we're going to do for today. Stay tuned. We'll be back tomorrow.
Any more specifics on some of those big mills or plants, though, that are still open?
No, not today. Nothing else. We've issued the orders we've issued, and I just will close again by saying that the orders we issue are issued for the purpose of protecting human life. We think obviously they're very, very, very necessary, but ultimately, how well we come out of this, how well we slow this down. It's going to depend on what each and every one of you do every single day. And so that's my message of the day. I guess it's been my message every day. But we have our destiny in our hands. This stuff is here. It's bad, but we can really slow it down. And we've taken some measures, and many of you are doing things. Thank you. Thank you for what you're doing. Thank you for what you're not doing. We got to get everybody on board. Every one of your fellow citizens needs to be doing the same thing, because this is a case where what we do not only impacts us and our family, it impacts total strangers. So we got to slow this thing down. The virus cannot jump without our help. And let's all get on board and do what we have to do. Thank you very much. We'll see you all tomorrow at, we hope, 2 o'clock. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.